Hey, it's episode 421 of the 343 podcast. Today is all about the March International FIFA window, specifically for the U.S. men's national team, specifically around the discussion happening with the losses against Belgium and Portugal, the shellacking against those two world powers, and also about all the musings that people have surrounding Mauricio Pochettino. It's not surprising that after the last window, when we Paraguay and Uruguay, everybody was on a high, and now everybody's on a low. And the reason you guys swing back and forth as the wind blows the leaves is because you're not standing on foundational principles, on solid granite understanding of football. And I don't know, we need a better capability of discerning and getting into the mind of a manager. So we're going to talk about this because, again, the mainstream media here in this country and the general fan base that is principally comprised of the MLS demographic don't get it. And if you're a parent in this ecosystem, you need to get it. And if you're a coach in this ecosystem, you need to get it. You're going to get it in this episode. Speaking of getting it, coaches, you can get it at 343coaching.com. There are free and premium coaching education programs for you there. These are rooted in the pioneering work of Brian Kleiben, who has spent a couple of decades operating here in the American soccer landscape at every single level, both genders, from U9 all the way up to and including the professional level. We've codified all of that. You get to witness him, the coach himself, in the actual training environment. No scripts, nothing is rehearsed. You get to witness a legit practitioner, a legit artist do the craft. You can have that craft as well. You can have the methodology as well. It's at 343coaching.com. And parents, we specifically crafted something for you to better guide and mentor your kids. And you can find that at 343masterclass.com. Last but certainly not least, if you're coaching in the 7-versus-7 format, you can go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody. I hope you enjoy this episode. Lots of gold nuggets per usual. Here we go.
Let's get right into it, Gary. I think everybody knows what we're going to talk about today. 5-2 against Belgium, Gary. 2-0 versus Portugal. I think we kind of predicted this in the last time that we chatted about the USMNT, but let's just start there, Gary, with those score lines and your reaction. How do you feel after this most current window of the USMNT?
Yeah, predictions are always difficult to make, but I think you're right, Benny, and people can fact check us that we kind of suggested that this might be the situation against Belgium and against Portugal after we had phenomenal, quote in quotes, phenomenal results against Paraguay and Uruguay, obviously beating Uruguay. What was it? 5-1, something like that, that we beat Uruguay with Marcelo Bielsa, and everybody's high, you know, thinking, wow, like we finally arrived. Finally, we're firing on all cylinders. Finally, we know who the team is. Finally, you know, Pochettino figured it out, all this sort of nonsense. And we said it was nonsense after those victories. And, oh, Gary, always so negative, you know, why can't you be positive? Like, when have you ever seen the U.S. men's national team beat Uruguay 5-1 against your idol, Marcelo Bielsa? And guys, why, when are you going to graduate to understand that this is not reality that you think that you know? So how am I feeling, Benny? Look, I watched the Belgium game, the entirety of it, and I'm not surprised by absolutely anything or any performances, except for maybe one, which was Tim Weah's performance when he was kind of tasked either directly or just indirectly to handle Doku, you know, on the left wing, and he was playing out there on the right side. Yes, he was burnt many times. Yes, he was, as the Americans like to say, was on skates many a times. But bro, come on, it's one of the best wingers in the world that he was up against. And he did a pretty good job, in my opinion. And for me anyways, it also, and I tweeted about this, it also kind of exposed or solidified for me the notion that Serginho Dest is not the solution to be an outside back at this level. Can he be a great outside back when you're playing against teams that are not top 10? Yes, because you give us a lot of forward projection and offensive weaponry. But defensively, dude, that guy would have been diced to smithereens in that match. But I'm not going to go into too many details. I'm sure you have a lot of things to talk about, Ben. So my impression after the Belgium game was great first half, competitive, and then everybody's all super happy. And everybody after the first half break, I don't know how much you watched these posts, Benny. People are saying, wow, we look great. And we actually were the better team in the first half. This is what they were saying at halftime. And I'm like scratching my head. I'm like, we're not watching the same game. We're not watching the same game. And, you know, after the 5-2 loss, people still don't get it because they're still in this mode of woulda, coulda, shoulda. Oh, if Pulisic had scored that one goal, you know, we would have been up 2-1 and then it would have been a different match. These people will never learn, Benny. And with respect to the 2-0 loss that we had against Portugal, I did not watch the match. I could not watch the match. All I know is that everybody was saying against Belgium, oh, if we had Chris Richards, it'd be different. Okay, we had Chris Richards against Portugal. People are still dumb and they're still going to say, well, we didn't get scored on 5 times. We only got scored on twice. Oh, Ben. Okay, anyway, I'm sure you have some notes jotted down that you want to expand further on. But my reaction, my bottom line is that I would have done the same things that Pochettino did because this is the last opportunity you get to see players to make a final World Cup roster. And you're not in these games to do everything possible to win these games. You were in these games to do everything possible to get the correct roster decision for the World Cup. So he threw people into the fire. Who gives a shit about the result?
Yeah, Gary, we're going to expand on that a little bit later in terms of Pochettino's tactical adjustments, if you will. But let's first go back to the prediction that we had a couple months ago. I think it was maybe 3-4 months ago. Not only the results, Gary, but also the fan base and their reaction, right? If anybody can go back and look at the episode and they clearly see you say, no matter what happens in this window, the fans and the media, they're going to flip, right? So for example, in the last window, we beat Uruguay. Everybody's raving. Pochettino's a hero. Things are looking up, right? And what did you say? If we go into this window and we get smashed by Belgium and Portugal, you're going to see a flip. And immediately, I'm sure you've seen it, Gary, on X and YouTube and everything. The ship is burning. Pochettino doesn't know what he's doing. Hercules Gomez once again coming out and attacking Pochettino. Like, bro, so quick for the media and the fans to flip, bro. And that's the thing that's crazy to me is what you just said, Gary. Not that these games don't matter, but the only thing that truly matters is the World Cup, right? And so Pochettino can do whatever he wants really in these games, bro. And people think like, oh, why wouldn't you be playing to win? We're 2-3 months away from the World Cup. Maybe he needs to get different looks, or maybe he wants to see Pulisic at the 9, right? I would encourage people go back and watch the first goal where it's Anthony Robinson to McKennie off the corner goal, and then they pan to Pochettino. You see his reaction. No celebration. Nothing. Because, one, he knows that this game is meaningless in terms of a result, but I also think deep down, Gary, he knows, fuck, like, Belgium is about to fucking break us down right now, dude. I think he knew what was coming in the second half, dude. You know? So I know I threw a lot out there, but let's quickly chat, Gary, about the flipping of the fan base and the media that you've seen.
It's something that we've been discussing for years, Ben. Folks here in the States especially look at the superficial stuff because by and large, the U.S. men's national team fan base and the MLS fan base, they are... The core demographic there comes from the other American sports. They come from American football. They come from baseball. They come from basketball, come from hockey. They come from all this other stuff. And what do they do there? They're very stats driven. And that's a whole other can of worms as to why it's more stats driven over there versus in soccer globally. And so they come to this sport, which they are not savvy in, and they try to carry over that same sort of analysis. Just look at the top superficial stats. What do they say? What's the XG? What's the XA? What are the shots on goal? What is the final score line? What are the minutes played? All the stuff that, I don't know, a seven-year-old can recite to you. That's what they rely on. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand if we win games, they think everything's amazing. And if we lose games, they think everything is trash. And it's also not a surprise that they look for a scapegoat because they can't do deep analysis. So what's a superficial scapegoat? Oh, who's leading this ship? Oh, the coach is leading this ship. So he's the guy at fault. Never mind that you have been saying for 5 to 10 years now, this is the golden generation. We have all these players in Europe. Look, they're starters on big teams. We have a handful of players that have Champions League experience. And on and on and superficial stuff again. So they don't look at their analysis as being flawed. They look at who's leading the ship. Oh, it's Berhalter. It's his fault. Oh, Klinsmann. It's his fault. Oh, Pochettino. It's his fault. And they keep doing this for 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years. And it's the same thing over and over again. And they never learn. They never learn that there's something deeper going on. So yeah, Ben, we're high as a kite in the last window. We beat two South American teams, very good South American teams. And they think everything's great. And now you lose these two games and they think everything's shit. And look, we go into this World Cup group. And if you come first in the group, they're going to think, wow, we're on a roll. We're on a rampage. You know, we're amazing. It's the same thing, Ben. And if they... you know, come crash in the World Cup, they think everything has gone to shit.
So, Gary, you just described, right, the fans that you say come from different sports and different demographics, and they don't really have the expertise to make good judgments, right? But what about the media, Gary? Like, I know I brought up Hercules Gomez, okay? In his little rant, he's basically saying, like, oh, Pochettino is saying that you guys have to understand that we don't have any top 100 players in Portugal and Belgium do. And Hercules is like, no, Pochettino, you need to understand that. You need to make these tactical adjustments. I'm like, bro, like one, listen, all respect to Hercules in his playing career, national team player, right? Plenty of caps, plenty of goals. That's awesome. Come to me when you've actually coached a team, a professional team. This guy has never in his life coached any team. And anybody that has transitioned from player to coach knows that it's completely different, right? It's a completely different world. You can be the best soccer player your entire career, but then as you start as a coach, so many different things that you need to be thinking about, and it's just a different world, man. So for Hercules to come out and say, hey, these are the tactical adjustments that Pochettino should have made. Bro, how do you know, dude? You've never been a coach. You don't know what he's thinking. You don't know why he's making the moves that he is right now. Like, to me, when the media comes out and say that, Gary, like, I think they should know better, no? But it seems like they still do.
Well, unfortunately, I think the qualification to be able to, I don't know, to judge in a better way or have credibility, at least for me, is for you to have been out in the real world and built something and created something of your own, where there is no set instruction manual and it's a complex system that's stochastic and chaotic and you have to adjust on the fly and you have to have a lot of deep subject matter expertise. Unless you have built something in the real world, it's very hard, in my opinion, for you to be humble in your opinions and in your critiques. Somebody like Hercules Gomez, and again, you said all due respect, but it's hard for me to respect the guy when he says the things that he says against people like Pochettino, people that he doesn't like. And remind me to bring up as to why that's also a reason. Is he's never built anything, Benny. He was a soccer player, meaning he was an employee his whole life. And now he continues being an employee, you know, being a talking head somewhere. You have never built anything. You have never risked anything. So how can he put himself in the, and he's never coached, as you said, how can he put himself in those shoes? And that's a player who has played professionally and even on the national team. Imagine what I think of folks who behave like Hercules and they've never kicked a soccer ball or they got to the level of Hercules Gomez. You've got guys like reporters like Jeff Carlisle, okay, a reporter, who is invited on these mainstream shows. I don't know if it's ESPN or Fox or whatever, but you know the category I'm talking about. And they're asking his opinion about things. Why are we asking that guy an opinion? Why are we asking any of these media guys an opinion? It's insanity, Ben. The thing that I think that is most important when you bring up Hercules Gomez and that cohort is that people don't, and why they hate Pochettino, for instance, and why they hated Jurgen, they don't like people who tell the truth. They don't like it. Jurgen Klinsmann, as soon as he started speaking hard, deep truths, they smeared him and they launched a whole campaign to get rid of him. What were the truths that he was saying? Well, for starters, when he was going into a World Cup, he said, I'm paraphrasing, well, look, we have to be realistic. If we're not going to win the World Cup, you know, let's be real, everybody. And everybody came out against him saying that, saying, oh, how could the coach of the national team come out before even the competition has started and say, there's no way that they're going to win the World Cup. What kind of a leader are you? Blah, blah, blah. But Jurgen was just saying the truth. And now you had Pochettino, who actually came out and said kind of the opposite. He said, hey, why can't we make a semifinal? Why can't we go ahead and do something like what Korea did when the World Cup was in shared Japan and Korea? We can do that. Why not us? And that is a true statement, Benny. Why not? Why not? And the media didn't like that either. Hercules Gomez didn't like that either. Oh, look at this guy. He's talking like semifinal stuff. He's in La La Land. So they didn't like that. Jurgen said when Bradley Altidore and Dempsey and all these guys came back to MLS before the World Cup, what are we doing? These guys should not be over here. We have a World Cup coming. They need to be challenging themselves in Europe. Or when he tried to get Jordan Morris and all these young players not to sign with MLS and go to Europe, they crucified him. But those were truths, Ben. And so here we have Pochettino now in the last press conference saying, hey, this is a top 10 team. You have to understand that we don't have players like theirs. We don't have top 100 players. They're littered with top 100 players. And they hate him for saying it. So what is it that you like, guys? What do you want? You are asking to be lied to. The media here in the fan base want to be lied to. They want to hear phrases like the future is bright. They want to get chants like, I believe that we will win. I believe that they want this. They want that. They don't want to live in the real world, Benny. That's why they hate me too.
Yeah. If that's the case, so Gary, why do you think they took so much offense to Pochettino saying, hey, we want to win the World Cup, right? Because you're saying they want to be lied to, right? Pochettino is, even if he knows it's not true, he's still coming out and say, yeah, our goal is to make a semifinal or to go and win the thing. So why is everybody getting so offended by him saying that?
Yeah, because he already, quote unquote, messed up by saying a truth many, many months ago. Two truths in particular. And this is when Hercules Gomez flipped and started going crazy on him. Pochettino suggested pretty straightforwardly that the media in this country doesn't know shit about soccer and that the fan base here doesn't have the culture and isn't great like it should be, like the world powers are. So he said those two truths. And ever since then, there's a whole group of people here, the MLS demographic, like a Hercules Gomez, who flipped on him. And now they hate him because he basically is telling Hercules Gomez and that group, you don't know shit about football. And so they can't get over that. So no matter what this guy says or what this guy does, he's going to be forever on their shit list. It does not matter.
Yeah. No, and Gary, we just saw both sides of the coin, like you just described it, right? One, he says, hey, we're going to look to win. And then he comes out and says the flip and says, no, we don't have any top 100 players. Which, by the way, remember how pissed like the U.S. fans were and the U.S. media was like, oh, why isn't Pulisic in there? Why isn't McKinney in there? And now you have our national team coach coming out and saying these things. So, I mean, he's tried to do both, but at this point, I mean, there's no winning for him anymore, sadly.
And folks might think that's a contradiction, what he said. It's not a contradiction. It's not contradictory for you as a coach who know you have an inferior quality roster to say, why can't we go and have our objective be winning the World Cup? Why can't we possibly make the semifinal? Yes, we can do that. We can. And that is not a lie, Benny. You know, we've had inferior teams that we've coached and you've been a part of. And we're like, why can't we win this tournament? Let's go. Even though we know the probabilities are low, but you go in it with that body language and that posture and with that belief, because that gives you a higher probability of potentially a higher, depending on your team culture, depending on your style, a higher probability of achieving those sorts of goals. Aim for the stars and you might land on the moon. Aim for the moon and you don't get even out of the Earth's atmosphere. Aim for the Earth's atmosphere and you didn't even get off the ground. So that's my philosophy. And that's Argentinian philosophy, generally speaking. That's Pochettino's philosophy. Let's aim for the stars. Let's aim for the trophy. And then let's see what happens. Go as far as we can. So he is not lying to you. And then when you lose against Portugal and Belgium, against superior opposition, he is not lying to you. He is saying they are superior. Their players are top 100 players. Our players are not top 100 players. So you can still have non-top 100 players and still go and win the World Cup. That is a possibility. Why not? Greece won the Euro 2004 with a shit show of a roster compared to their opposition. It's possible, Benny. Korea went to the semifinals as a host. It's possible. Russia did very well. I think they went to the quarters and lost to Croatia, the finalist, you know, when France won the World Cup when it was in Russia. It's possible. You can do these things. You're the United States in 1994, and you eliminated Colombia, who was one of the favorites to win the whole goddamn thing in the group phase. You eliminated them. You advanced as the United States, and you barely lost to the World Cup champion, Brazil, 1-0 in 1994. It's possible. You got out of a group with Germany and Portugal also. I think it was under Klinsmann, right? These sorts of things are possible, even though you're inferior. So Pochettino is not contradicting himself. He's just telling you the truth, guys, and you hate him for it.
Hey, Gary, before we move on, is there like some type of water drain or something in the room? Or something, like I hear some type of background noise.
There's a shower going on. We'll have to live with it. I'll mute myself while you speak.
No, you're good. I wasn't sure if it was coming from you or from me. But all right, Gary, so let's talk about the tactical adjustments. And everybody was so pissed about Pochettino in the second game, starting with Pulisic and McKennie, as, you know, Pulisic kind of as a false nine. And everybody's crying about Pepe being on the bench and Adjimang, Balogun. So, Gary, to you, why do you think that Pochettino did what he did right here? And why is it important for people to understand, or a couple months away from the World Cup, Pochettino wants to see what his team is capable of, see what formation they can play in or where certain guys can play. So why do you think people are so strung up on just these results versus what Pochettino's trying to do tactically?
I think it principally comes from thinking that the best thing to do is to have found who your team is already, who your starting 11 is already. And then in these final maybe two or four games leading up to the World Cup, you just play those guys and have them, quote, I hate this word, you have them, quote unquote, gel. Let's have them gel, you know, really good before you go to the World Cup. Stupid, naive, superficial nonsense, okay? We need to make an episode of all the red flags that exist in American soccer parlance. So if somebody says things like the team needs to gel, red flag, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And especially when it comes to national teams. So when you frame this question, Benny, you're talking about, well, you talked about two things, tactics, tactical adjustments. You mentioned that phrase. And then you mentioned some players like Pepe or whatever. So with respect to tactics and tactical adjustments, you think that that is what should be happening in these two games because you have the framing of trying to be as competitive as possible and win the game against these two opponents. If that is the objective, then yes, You can criticize the tactics, the adjustments, or whatever the fuck you want. If that's the objective, fine. Then you can say maybe Pochettino made a mistake. Keep everything the way it was in the first half. Don't change a goddamn thing or bring in a different player or whatever. Fine. But you're making a huge assumption that the objective was to win these matches or keep it close or have the team gel, okay? How about if the ultimate objective that Pochettino and the staff had was, I still not quite sure about who the final full roster is going to be. I'm going to throw all these guys on there. I don't care about the result. These are my last opportunities to find out who I want in the World Cup. So if that is the ultimate objective, Benny, there is no such thing as tactical adjustments in the game. It's not, what are you adjusting? Oh, let's adjust so we can eliminate Doku. Who gives a fuck? I don't care about that shit. I want to throw in Roldan. I want to throw in all these guys. I want to throw in Berhalter. I want to throw in Aiden Morris. And I want to see a little bit more. And then I'm going to have more data to be able to make a final roster decision for the World Cup. If that is the ultimate objective, then Pochettino nailed it. People got exposed. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. You played who you thought was perhaps the strongest. Maybe. I don't want to put words in his mouth. I don't know what's in his mind. I know what it goes through the minds of coaches. We've been coaches forever, Benny, decades here of experience. I know what kind of conversations are happening, and it doesn't matter whether it's at the national team level or at, I don't know, U18 Academy finals or something like this. You think this particular way. And so I think the guy did the right thing. Who cares about the result? Let me see who's got it and who doesn't have it.
Yeah, there's so much to pull on that thread, Gary, but really quick, can we go back to why is it a red flag for somebody to say the team needs to gel, right? Because if you think about the Argentine national team here in the last World Cup, if you saw any of like the behind the scenes or the locker room stuff or stuff at the hotel and stuff, like you could tell that team, like they were all brothers with each other, loved each other, were going to do anything possible. And obviously they were all collectively wanting to win for Messi. But at the end of the day, I think it was still a team that played really well together, battled for each other, had each other's back on the field. You know, so what is wrong with the phrase, a team needs to gel? I'm just curious.
Yeah. Gosh, there's so many things to talk about here because a lot of my issue with that, it comes from youth soccer here in the States because you hear over and over and over and over again. But let's keep it to the national team. I'm not going to lie and say team cohesion isn't important. It's important. If you look at Spain, when they won the World Cup, how did they win the World Cup? Well, obviously they had an immense quality on the field, but they also had principally the entire team was from Barcelona and Real Madrid. And all those connections were already made and they've known each other from memory forever. So Xavi, Busquets, Iniesta, you had Sergio Ramos, you had that whole cohort, you had David Villa, you had Nuno Torres, you had that whole cohort that have known themselves intimately for years. They've been on the same team for years, and that is a huge benefit. Or if you look at Germany, a lot of Bayern Munich players have been playing together forever. Okay, you have that sort of cohesion. You cannot replicate that sort of quote-unquote gelling with the U.S. men's national team, because the U.S. men's national team's players are all on different teams. They all don't play together throughout the entire season. So it's a completely different context already. You brought up Argentina. Well, Argentina has had basically the same team forever. So they've had a process going on forever, and eventually they all cohered around Messi. So you can't replicate that with the U.S. men's national team. You don't have a Messi. You don't have an ultimate coherent objective that everybody shares. Everybody seems like they're out for their own interests. And you can say the same thing about Brazil, which is maybe another topic for another day. They're in shambles right now because there is no unity. And so here's where somebody might say, well, see, Gary, that's why it's important for the U.S. men's national team to just pick 11 guys or 18 guys and stick with those 11 or 18 guys forever and have them gel. So by the time they get to the World Cup, they have at least some sort of cohesion like you just described. The problem with that, Ben, is that the quality of the player here in the U.S., you don't know who the best guys are. You don't know. You don't know who the best guys are. And so Pochettino inherits this team that has a bunch of mid players, and he's desperate. That's how I view it. He's so desperate that he'll go to MLS and start picking Cristiano Ronaldo from MLS. He'll start picking players from MLS. He'll start picking Diego Luna, who, you know, 2 years ago was playing USL and barely started doing well with Real Salt Lake and playing in an extremely low-level MLS league. So he picks that guy, and he brings on who's the left-footer who's kind of like Alex Mendez again, who was on Philly Union, and now Jack McGlynn. Okay, young kid brings on Jack McGlynn. He looks like he's got something special. I don't see anything special on this U.S. men's national team. Come on in. Let's give it a go. He brings in Arfston. He brings in Freeman. He brings in all these MLS guys, and people think it's some sort of conspiracy that he's in Don Garber's pocket or MLS's pocket, and that's why he's elevating these guys from MLS. The guy is desperate. The pool that he inherited is shocking, and so you're trying to figure it out, and nobody is special, Benny. So you go through this whole process hoping that you can find 11 or 18 guys that are for sure the guys. And then it's okay, fine. I got my 11, 18 guys. Let's just give them continuity leading up to the World Cup. But Pochettino doesn't have the 11 or 18 guys. He doesn't have them. They're all shocking. With all respect, okay, Pulisic's a cut above the rest. McKinney's a cut above the rest. You got maybe three guys that are like, okay, for sure. But everybody else is like, whatever. People say, oh, Chris Richards. I like Chris Richards. You can go back to our YouTube channel. You see Brian going on for, he did a whole analysis of the whole player pool four years ago. And Chris Richards is one of the guys that we've always supported. Yes, he should be the starting center back. We said this 3 years ago, Benny, a long time ago. So we know he's good, but he's not like, wow, like, amazing. None of these guys are. Anthony Robinson also got exposed this window. He's not amazing. None of these guys are amazing. So what do you want the guy to do? You want Pochettino just pick the 11, 18 guys that Berhalter kind of elevated and just stick with ride with those guys till he dies? I don't like it, Benny. I don't like it. And this is the mistake. This is why I can't stand the word gelling, because people who say they need a gel, they are under the assumption that it's clear who the best 18 are, and you should just stick with the best 18.
I'm going to play devil's advocate, Gary, and give you the response that most misguided people say in this country. Gary, you just said you don't know who the best players are. Okay. In theory, wouldn't the best players be playing in the top leagues in the world or playing overseas? Not guys that are playing in MLS. In theory, aren't those the best guys?
Well, you just answer your own question. In theory, but not in practice. Not in practice. So in theory, Ricardo Pepi should be a protagonist, should be the starter. I don't know what these people think, right? In theory. Oh, look, he's on PSV. Oh, look, Fulham made a multi-million dollar offer for him. Wow, Premier League club wants him. In theory. It ain't the case. Benny, it ain't the case. Not only is it not the case because a lot in soccer, especially here in the United States, is random. Who got elevated early gets to go farthest, potentially, and you probably have elevated the wrong characters. But also, it depends on what the coach's philosophy and vision and system of play he sees. And certain players, even if they're on Real Madrid, it's possible that a certain player on Real Madrid just doesn't fit what the coach wants. It's as simple as that. So Ricardo Pepi might be banging in goals in Holland, but he doesn't have the player profile that Pochettino wants. Maybe he does, though, Benny. Maybe in Pochettino's mind, Ricardo Pepi is going to be the starter in the World Cup. But he didn't play this window because he doesn't need to play. He already knows that is my guy. So I'm going to play these other guys. I'm just throwing ideas out there because nobody thinks about these things.
True. My thought, Gary, was when I saw Weston McKennie kind of posting up top, I'm thinking like maybe Pochettino thinks or Pochettino knows. I know that Weston McKennie is not the archetype or the player profile that I want to be operating my midfield. So I still see value in him. Maybe let's give him a run up top and maybe let's see that. You think that's maybe a reason here? He doesn't want that type of technically lacking player in the central midfield.
It's possible. There's just so many elements, Ben. The other element that at least people here in the States do kind of get this because they always bring it up. So I'll give them credit for that. They do harp on intensity a lot here in the States, the fan base and the media. Oh, you know, they're not intense enough. They don't have the heart for it. They look like they gave up, that sort of stuff. So that's a good thing to be saying. That's another thing that a coach really cares about. Are you going to bleed until you die and not give a shit about your club situation, not give a shit about your health, right? So you will go into every tackle 100% and not hold back and go 75, 80% because you might get hurt. And you will recover on defense, even if it's not your job or something like this. That's an intangible. And so Weston McKennie seems to have that characteristic a lot. Like, he will battle and battle and battle and battle and battle and battle and not give up. And he brings an aerial threat. Then he's the best in the aerial threat. And he's, if I were to give him credit as a player with an attribute that is global class, it would be that. He's very good in the air on set pieces. Exceptional. He's very dangerous. So that is an important attribute to have. So he can come along for the ride just for that very attribute and for the attribute of battling. Okay, so he's technically deficient. Fuck it. Do I take that technical deficiency, but the other two attributes over the technical supremacy of, I don't know, some other player, but they have no aerial threat and they can't battle and win 50-50 duels? Maybe Pochettino's like, I need this type of player. See, it's so multifaceted, Ben. It's not black and white.
Yeah, so many things go into it. But there you go, Gary. Go for it.
No. I was going to bring up Johnny Cardoso. Oh, how come Johnny Cardoso is in the... He's a starter at Atletico Madrid. They're in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. He's the starter. How could he not... Guys, who gives a fuck? If he doesn't have the profile that the coach needs in his vision with his other compatriots, he doesn't have the profile.
Yeah. No, Gary, that might be the U.S.'s ticket to the final. Just rehearse set pieces fucking nonstop, bro, because you have McKennie. And, like, the U.S. seems to be pretty good at set pieces, bro, you know? So there you go.
There's it's always been that way.
Yeah, there's your ticket to the final right there, Gary. Set pieces galore.
Yeah. What's funny? It's been that way forever, Benny. 20, 30 years. It's been set pieces, set pieces, set pieces. That coupled with putting the ball in the mixer, as the English would say, and hopefully some random chaos happens in the box and you get a goal. It's never really been about build up play, organization, offensive pattern creation, creativity, unlocking the other team's defense, and then bam, you finish. It's never like Argentina's goal against France, right? Where Dibu Martinez clears the ball. Yeah, I'm sure you've seen it a million times, right? And he clears the ball and tac, 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 counterattack at high velocity, one and two touches, and then Di Maria puts it away. When have you seen the U.S. men's national team do that? Doesn't happen, man.
Have you seen any of that, Gary, under Pochettino versus Berhalter, Klinsmann? Like, has the identity and has the style of play changed at all much, or kind of hard to tell with the games that
we've
played?
It's hard, yeah. It's hard to tell, man. It's hard to tell. The only thing that I see that is significantly different under Pochettino is the body language, the posture, and the culture of the players and the group as a whole and how they compete. Yes, they still don't have the fire that other national teams, top national teams, seem to have insofar as massive pride and not holding back and giving everything for the national team jersey. I still don't see that, but it's way improved versus what it was under Berhalter. And the Berhalter, it was a country club. They were on vacation. So that is the biggest difference. Insofar as playing style, and it looks a little bit more aggressive and a little bit more organized on the attack, Ben, but it's nothing remarkable.
Yeah. Gary, why do other countries have that burning passion and desire for their national team and here, it seems like that's just not the case.
You know, so many things just went through my mind. I'll share the first one that came. Argentina used to have this seeming issue in the early 90s, or throughout the 90s, and even early 2000s, when soccer became so economical at the professional level, and there was so much money circulating, that the Argentine players, you know, would go to Europe and become rich. Especially this with this one, Italy's Serie A was the best league in the world by far, okay? And they become multimillionaires. And so there was a lot of critique when they would come to the national team, even though, imagine, they cared a lot, but still, they would come to the national team, and they didn't look like they played with the intensity and fervor that they did when they were playing with Fiorentina, or when they were playing with Parma, or when they were playing with Napoli, or when they were playing with Inter, or when they were playing with AC Milan, or when they were playing with Sampdoria. And so they get massive criticism. Oh, it's because you're in fucking Italy making millions of dollars and you don't want to get hurt here with the national team. So you're being all bitches, you know, blah, 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 blah. And you guys are all already kind of the presumed national team starters and players like forever because you guys are the Europeans and everybody here who's still in Argentina isn't going to make the national team. So I draw a very, there's a, seems to be a parallel with this current generation of U.S. men's national team players, that there's a group of, say, like 20 guys who are in Europe making millions of dollars for the first time for Americans, right? Making millions versus their MLS counterparts. And the club is what's most important to them because that's their moneymaker and they don't want to get hurt. And that's where there's a lot more pressure over there in Europe than there is with the national team. So they feel that pressure, and when they come to the national team, it's not that much pressure. And so there's a natural relaxation that happens. And they also know that by and large, their positions on the national team are kind of secured. Like Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, Anthony Robinson, like these sorts of players, I'm going to the World Cup, like no matter what. So do I have to really go hardcore when I show up to the national team? Nah. And is the fan base so hardcore that they're going to call me out and destroy me or destroy me in the media? Nah, not really. So, I mean, not compared to AC Milan, not compared to Juventus, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, if I get criticism in the United States, it's a joke compared to what I experience in Italy or what I experience in the Premier League. So it's no big deal to them, the national team.
Yeah, it's good. It's kind of sad, Gary. I mean, a perfect example, if you look at the second goal that Portugal scored off the corner, there is zero reason why fucking João Felix should have the amount of time that he had. Bro, and it's a floated ball too. It wasn't like fucking driven, pinged right up. The ball is floating, bro. And you see all of the U.S. players kind of just like watching it go by. And then they're like, oh, fuck, maybe I should go step. But if you had that killer mentality of, hey, every time I put on this jersey for the U.S. national team, I'm representing my country. Like, bro, you are flying to get to that. Like, you are not allowing that chance to happen, bro. But now it's kind of just like cruise control. Or if you look at the first goal that I think Belgium's first goal where McKennie kind of turns it over, they slip in a through ball. You can literally see Anthony Robinson watching the play unfold. He's waiting, jogging back, jogging. And then he realizes, oh, fuck, my guy's right there. Maybe I should be sprinting. And by the time he does, it's too late. So just little moments like that, Gary, whereas you would see at most any other team in the world in those moments going at 1,000%, like their life depends on it, versus the U.S. where they feel that they can take a couple plays off here and there, you know? And we'll see if it's any different at the World Cup. You know, but bro, no matter what you're, even if it's a friendly, you should still be going balls out, bro. Not chilling, jogging, going through the motions.
Yeah. And these players should know better, except for maybe the MLS guys, that you should be able to size up your opponent and understand that they have the quality, that if they're left alone, even under, because that's very difficult, right? Bringing a ball out of the air, you know, from a corner kick and then actually hitting a ball good enough through all those legs to actually get it on frame and actually score a goal. It's very difficult. You're not going to see that in MLS every day of the week. Okay.
Right.
So some of these guys, I think it was Aiden Morris that maybe stepped out to the player, and Aiden Morris plays in the English Championship. They don't have the quality either to do what João Felix did. And somebody in the comments is going to be like, oh, look at this, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they do it in the English Championship, guys, for fuck's sake. Okay. But that is a potential reason why there's a lackadaisical sense of urgency or a low sense of urgency at times, because you're so programmed to not see exceptional plays happen. You're like, yeah, what are the chances this is going to go in? You know,
yep.
Or what are the chances somebody's going to put a disguised pass through ball, you know, and launch a, give a 1v1 with the keeper? What are the chances? Like, there's no, we're not playing Messi here, but no, you're not, but you're playing against Vitinha and Bruno Fernandes and all these top quality, or Kevin De Bruyne or whatever. Yeah, they can F you, but they don't see it every day, Benny. And so there's no sense of urgency. I don't know. I'm trying to explain it a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's unforgivable, man. You can't do that. There's just so much time and space.
Yeah, so much, dude. I think that's it's a big thing, Gary, is that it seems most other top 25 countries, they have special players. They have very technically gifted players that can change the game in one action. And it just seems that we don't have those types of players. I mean, sure, you can say maybe Pulisic is up there, but he's not on the same fucking quality of João Felix or any of these other guys that you see in the Belgium national team. I mean, both games, Gary, Belgium, Portugal, both teams are scoring off a clean strike from outside the box. Clean. Or those guys are going to hit that 10 out of 10 times. The U.S. players, maybe, I don't know, 5 out of 10 times they hit that, bro. You know? So, small details, man. That's another thing that Pochettino brought up is, hey, we're missing a lot of the small details that need to be fixed.
Yeah. And the coach can honestly only do so much. What do you want? The coach isn't on the field kicking the soccer ball or on the field reacting from defense to offense and offense from defense. What do you want the guy to do? What do you want the guy to do? Well, like, you're a coach, Ben. You've been coaching for 10 years. However long it's been. I've been involved for 20. There's only so much you can do. And then it's on them, on the field. And then it's their qualities that come out or get exposed. And you got exposed. The team got exposed. The players got exposed for what they are in these two matches, which is awesome. It's awesome. And I wish the media and the fan base in this country would look at that as an opportunity for they themselves to learn something. But they refuse to learn, Benny. They refuse. I don't know who they think we are. You answer me this question, Benny. Who, the media and the fan base, who do they think we are as a soccer nation?
I don't know, bro. I honestly can't answer that. Maybe they think we're fucking prime Barcelona or something, bro.
No, because the way they behave, Benny, the way they behave, the way they criticize, it's as if.
Right.
I want to know that answer. Hercules Gomez, with all your bullshit criticism, your hatred towards Mauricio Pochettino, because you got insulted because he said the media doesn't know dick and the American soccer fan base doesn't know dick, and he told you the truth. You don't know dick. What? Who do you think the U.S. men's national team is? Who do you think we are, Ben? Hercules Gomez. Who do you want as the coach? What coach is going to come in here and do something amazing and miraculous? Or not even amazing, miraculous, because apparently you think that we should be beating or doing or tying or doing amazing stuff against Portugal and Belgium.
Yeah. Gary, I've asked you this question in the context of youth player development, but let's ask it here in this context of the men's national team. How much impact does Pochettino play on the result? How much will he, I'm trying to find the right way to phrase this so it makes sense. How much responsibility does Pochettino hold for the results that we're going to see in the World Cup as the coach of the team?
Man. Okay. We have to set a baseline here. I think the biggest influence a national team manager has are the following. Number one is roster selection. Massive influence. Next is cultural cohesion and identity. Okay, what type of football are we trying to play? And do we have a good group of players that is going to offer 100% energy, effort, intensity in every single action of the game at all times as individuals and as a team? Okay, so those two things, roster selection in that piece. And then the third component is adjustments, the substitutions. What substitutions are you going to make? So the first two pieces are the most influential. And so once that's done by the World Cup, you have no more, the coach has no more influence. It's over. Okay. Then it's the substitutions. I would say, Ben, you want like a percentage, huh? God, it's just so hard, man. It's so hard. I'll just to give people maybe a feel for what I'm thinking, I would say the coach maybe has 15 to 20% influence. That's it.
Right.
The rest is 100% on the players and what they do on the field and a little bit of luck and randomness involved. Because let's be real, Benny. In a knockout tournament, anything can happen. 1 inch to the left, 1 inch to the right, in one action, changes the course of history.
Yeah. No, Gary, the reason I'm asking, and I guess the point that I'm trying to make is so many people are putting the blame on Pochettino, but I think that they don't realize that it doesn't matter who the coach is, Gary. We could have gotten anybody, Gary. We could have gotten Bielsa, Pep, Mourinho, Klopp. We're still going to be the U.S. men's national team, Gary. We're not all of a sudden going to turn into the French national team or the Spanish national team that won the World Cup in 2010. The players are still the players. And it's so funny to see how the scapegoat has always been the national team coach, right? Because what are they going to do? They have nobody else to blame but him. But, bro, like you just asked to Hercules, go get any other coach, bro. They're not just going to all of a sudden lead the U.S. to a World Cup in a two-year runway that Pochettino has had. It's like Pochettino has kind of been given an impossible task, man. And again, it could be any coach, Gary, any coach. Are they going to come in and all of a sudden, no, it's going to be the same thing, bro.
Yeah. And for those who say, oh, you can tell that Pochettino doesn't care and he's just cashing a paycheck and mailing it in because he knows he's gone after the World Cup anyway. He's going to go coach whoever, Real Madrid or Liverpool, whatever the fuck it is. You have never built anything. You do not understand the motivations of people who are successful, of people who are builders by nature. It shows when you say something like this. When people say something like that, it demonstrates who they themselves are, that they have a job that they just go to and fuck around and just do the bare minimum to cash their paycheck and not get fired. They expose themselves. They are projecting onto Pochettino who they themselves are. Pochettino's a winner. You think a coach of a national team who's going to the World Cup, okay, and a World Cup at home, you think he doesn't care about his win-loss column, about his legacy, about performing well? Oh my God, it is supreme ignorance to think that. Of course he cares. He probably cares more about this job and what's happening now than anything in his entire history as a manager. By a factor of 10, probably, Benny, he cares more about this. He's going to coach a World Cup, Benny, with the host nation.
Yeah, it means everything. Look, Gary, you brought up a really good point on X when you were responding to somebody. I don't remember the exact tweet, but it was something to the degree of, you were going to say how usually home team or the home team has a big advantage, but now in the U.S. with the fans that we have, with the neutered fan base, with the fake MLS fans, it's not really an advantage. So do you think that, have you kind of backed, because I know in the past when we talked about the USMNT in this upcoming World Cup, you said, hey, we're going to be at home. It's a massive advantage. Do you not think the same anymore?
That's a great question. I still think it is better than you not playing at home. I still think that. Do I think it's a massive advantage for the U.S.? Yeah, I'm having some doubts. I'm having some doubts, and I'll tell you why. Because what I've seen in the past 10 years, let's say, is that even when the U.S. plays at home, forget the fact, and it's a very important fact, probably the number one fact, that even though they play at home, you have a bunch of the opposition fans there in the stadium that are louder, rowdier, more influential than our docile, neutered eunuchs that we have for fans here in the country. But there's a lot of evidence to show you that it doesn't, you play gold cups against like Jamaica or Honduras or Panama or you against Guatemala, and this U.S. men's national team is still suffering. They can barely get results. it doesn't look like that big of an advantage. Or you play Copa America, and Jurgen did amazing with Copa America here at home. He lost to Argentina, but okay, he lost to Messi and company. Like, come on, give the guy a break a little bit. But then you had Berhalter, Copa America here at home again, and they got knocked out in the group phase. So there's a lot of evidence to suggest that maybe it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, we'll definitely see. I know for sure Mexico will have an advantage. And I know Canada will, but because the Mexican fans go hard, bro. Like, if I was going to go to a World Cup game, I'm not going anywhere here in the U.S. I'm going to Mexico. That environment is going to be insane, bro. Yeah. Even the Canadians will probably do it better than us, Finn, which is shocking, but we'll see.
Well, here they'll probably try to have all kinds of stupid rules. Like, you can't be too rowdy. You can't have certain banners. You can't have certain chants in the stadium. You wink, wink. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So they destroy the game here. They destroy the culture.
Yeah, for sure. Let me ask you this, Gary. Do you think currently we're in a better position than we were 4 years ago leading into a World Cup? So under Pochettino, are we more prepared and in a better situation than we were under Berhalter going into Qatar?
I would say yes. I would say yes, because of the attitude of the players and the seriousness that Pochettino has instilled, I think, in the group. I see a McKinney that is a lot more serious versus what it was like under Berhalter. Do you remember under Berhalter, they had this whole leadership council thing that they started, or he started? He's like, oh, the players, you guys are going to have a leadership council. You're going to have a group of five guys or six guys or seven, who knows, or three guys that are the player representatives or something. And like, they have power and they dictate policy. And what the fuck is going on? You're letting the inmates run the asylum. No, in football, it is a dictatorship. The coach is the dictator, the monarch, the king, the ultimate power. He is God. End of story. What is this? Oh, let's have a democracy. Let's vote on things. How are you guys feeling? You also see, I don't know if it was Pochettino, or where did I read this recently? Some manager was asked, I think it was Pochettino, hey, like, for the guys that don't make the World Cup, you know, are you going to give them a call, you know? And he's like, no, why the fuck am I going to call the guys that aren't going to make the roster? It's the dumbest thing ever. Oh, hey, Benny, I'm sorry you didn't make the team, you know? It's such a weak, soft, pussy ass, ignorant thing to say and to do. The last thing a player wants also is to fucking hear why he's being cut by the person who's cutting him. Now, and I think he followed up with saying, now, if the player wants to talk to me, you know, after the fact and stuff, and wants to know the reasons why, no problem at all. I'm more than happy to have a conversation. But I am not going to call the players that I'm cutting to say, you're cut and I'm so sorry, you know, it was a very difficult decision, blah, 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 blah. That is the fucking soft-ass culture that we have in this country, Ben.
Yep. Okay, let's wrap up with this. You tweeted a while back, one MLS player on the field. I don't remember the exact wording. I should have screenshot it, but one MLS player on the field is criminal, two is even worse, and having five on the field is basically you're fielding a wreck team. Okay, so what's your, now the window's over, next thing coming up is the World Cup, what's your verdict on an MLS player making the national team? Are there any that you think can hang?
And they're all shocking, Benny. They're all shocking. I don't know, unless I'm forgetting somebody. Can you know somebody who's like, oh no, but this guy Gary, he's legit, he should be on the squad?
Well, everybody keeps saying Berhalter, bro. I mean,
shocking, absolutely shocking, no fucking chance. People like to rip on Tim Ream, and look, I think people, he gets a bad rap from the fans and the media. It's not as bad as they make it out to be. He's old, he's a fossil. How old is he, 38 years old or 37? But the guy brings a lot of experience, and experience matters, okay? especially as a center back, experience matters. You're not playing outside back where you're going to get roasted with athleticism. You're playing center back. You don't need outrageous athleticism. You need intelligence. You need good positioning. You need good decision-making. And the guy, is he better than Chris Richards now? No, he's not. Chris Richards should be the guy. Are there other possible people who can fill in there? Yes. But I think the guy is getting poorly criticized by the fan base here. And I bring up Tim Ring because he's playing in MLS now. But he has enormous European pedigree under his belt. So that would be the only guy that I would have no issues with being on the field come competition. I'm trying to think of another name, but no other name makes sense to me. Everybody's shocking, Benny. You can't. It's very difficult, dude. You're going from playing in a recreational soccer league to playing in the highest competition in the world. You can't. Yeah, I don't care how good you are as a footballer. You're not used to it.
No, and that's why, Gary, I think Pochettino has given ample opportunities to MLS players so that he can now say, hey, look, I gave you the chance. I gave you guys an opportunity. Clearly, we're not ready. And so now going into the World Cup, okay, I have my roster decision made. But if he were to just call, I know you hate this phrase, Gary, but call in the regulars, right? And not call in any new MLS players. And then come time for the World Cup, he doesn't bring any. People are going to start saying, oh, well, he didn't give these guys a chance. But now he did. He gave them plenty of games, plenty of opportunities. And against CONCACAF teams, they look like they can hang. And then once you put them against a top 25 team in the world, amateur hour, Gary.
It's amateur hour. And not only did he give them a lot of chances, looks on the national team, part of the strategy at this level, Benny, and this shouldn't be a secret to people, is the national team is a platform, a window for you to get a move to Europe. So if you platform these guys early in the cycle, then they get moves to Europe. They get offers from Europe. The MLS has to play ball and not be dickheads and allow transfers to happen. And so if you're the national team manager, that's what you want to do. You find the guys in the domestic league that maybe have something that you like, platform them, have them go to Europe immediately, and then play in Europe for at least a whole season or something. And then they're ready for real international duty and a World Cup, maybe. So the guy platformed MLS guys. Some MLS guys got some moves overseas, and it's just not good enough.
Yeah.
But Ben, if you have, see, this is the other issue. Pochettino only had a short runway. He didn't have a full cycle to do at least one of these strategies, the strategy I just mentioned. If you have a full 4 years, okay, immediately you platform guys that you think are high quality. They get moves to overseas, to Europe, to a real competition. They develop in a real competition with real players and real managers and real everything for 1, 2, 3, 4 seasons. And then come World Cup time, you have seasoned professionals that are playing in a real competition ready for you. But he didn't have that. What he inherited was what the previous regime did and what the previous regime platformed. And what the previous regime platformed was shocking. The player pool that they elevated and platformed was shocking. Pochettino has a shocking group, which we called the Golden Generation.
Good way to end it there, Gary. I do want to ask you one more question. Who will be the starting nine, Gary? First game of the World Cup.
I'm thinking they'll put Balogun there.
That was my guess. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, Balogun. They'll put him there. Yeah, maybe I'll come up with a starting 11 will be, and we'll end it with a graphic of my guess. But you just never know. You never know what's in a manager's mind.
Sure.
You can take educated guesses. I just wish that the American media and fan base had better educated guess.
Very true. All right, Gary, go hit the craps table, my friend.
No, I'm not a gambler. I don't gamble, brother. But one caveat. Come this World Cup, like I did last World Cup, I'm going to come up with some sort of gambling strategy for the U.S. men's national team. Last World Cup, I bet on the U.S. to win its games, right? That way, if they win, I get paid. And if they lose, that's great, because we've been saying all along, they suck, and it helps further our agenda.
Nice.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant, possession-based football, while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.